Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, of course, as you know, we're in the election season, both in Israel and the presidential election for 2016 really has already started in America. So you're seeing us now every week churn out videos. We've just started the campaign. This is the second week of our campaign. We've just started it. You're going to be seeing this continue and intensify. But I want to speak about one Hebrew video that we put out just earlier today. We just uploaded it earlier today because I think we should explain to our great JTFers in English who don't speak Hebrew what our position is and why we've taken the position that we've taken. Moshe Feiglin is a member of the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli Parliament, and he was elected from an organization called Manigut Yehudit, which means Jewish leadership. Manigut Yehudit is Jewish leadership, and it's a faction that he created of people that joined the Likud with the intention of making him prime minister and of taking over the Likud. Now, we happen to disagree with the strategy of joining the Likud. I don't think that was a wise strategy, but, and we have some other differences with him. But despite our tactical differences with Moshe Feiglin, and sometimes we have ideological differences as well. He is not a Kahanist. We are Kahanists, of course. Nevertheless, he has taken positions that clearly distinguish him from the other people in Israeli politics. For instance, Moshe Feiglin advocates that $50,000 be paid in compensation to every Arab family. If an entire Arab family is willing to leave Israel permanently, they should be offered $50,000 in compensation. So that is similar to our proposal for compensation. We haven't put a figure on it. We haven't put the figure of $50,000 on it, on our proposal. But the Kahanist proposal has always been to offer compensation to the Arabs to leave Israel permanently. So Moshe Feiglin has adopted that, and he's the only person in Israeli politics who is running on that. And I think that's very important, and I think that that means that he deserves to be heard. His voice deserves to be heard. Secondly, he has played a very, very courageous role and a constructive role in demanding Jewish prayer rights on Har HaBayit. Har HaBayit is the Temple Mount where the Holy Temple was, where both Holy Temples were. And Har HaBayit is now polluted, of course, by these two vicious Jew-hating mosques where the Muslims pray for the destruction of the Jews and of all non-Muslim infidels, and where the Muslims plan their terrorist activities. This is the holiest spot in the world for the Jewish people. It's the holiest spot in the world, period. And the Muslims, in their arrogance, built mosques there to show that Islam is dominant over Judaism, just like they build mosques on Christian sites as well to show that Islam is dominant over every other religion. This is what they do everywhere. And unfortunately, we've tolerated this and gave the keys and the control of the Temple Mount to the Waqf, to the Muslim Nazi Waqf, which is the Muslim Nazi committee that rules over Har HaBayit. It's a terrible situation. It's a disgraceful situation. It's a Chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name of the worst type possible. The worst type of Chilul Hashem. It can't get worse than this. This is what we dreamed of. This is our dream for thousands of years. The dream of the Jewish people is not Tel Aviv and is not Eilat and is not to have nice beaches and a nice shore and have high-tech companies in the Holy Land. That's not the dream of the Jewish people. The dream of the Jewish people for thousands of years, the dream that millions of Jews who were murdered, their dream, their aspiration, as they were being murdered, was to return to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem, our holy city, our eternal capital, and to see the rebuilding of the Holy Temple, and to see the restoration of Jewish prophecy, because you know when the Holy Temple is rebuilt, there's going to be prophecy again. And God will again manifest himself openly in the world. There won't be any atheists when that happens. And so, for us to allow Bnei Amalek, the children of Amalek, these Muslim Nazi mass murderers, to pollute our most sacred place in the world, is just the ultimate example of the self-hating sickness that permeates the Jewish world and that permeates the Jewish mentality in our generation. And Moshe Feiglin has gone and demanded the right of Jews to be able to pray on the Temple Mount, to be able to go up to the Temple Mount. The Muslim Nazis have their mosques there, and Jews for many years were barred by the Israeli government, by a so-called Jewish government, a Jew-hating government, an anti-Semitic government, because the Israeli government is anti-Semitic. Yes, I know that sounds crazy, but we live in a crazy world. To deny Jews this right, and to say only Muslims have a right to pray on the holiest spot in the world for the Jewish people, is the ultimate example of an anti-Semitic policy. The sickest type of self-hatred that you could possibly have. That is the policy of the Israeli government toward Har HaBayit, toward the Temple Mount, toward the sacred place where Beit HaMikdash, where the Holy Temple was situated. And Moshe Feiglin has tried to restore our rights on the Temple Mount. And so because of what he's done courageously on Har HaBayit, in the Temple Mount, and because of the fact that he is offering compensation for the Arabs to leave Israel, which is the original Kahanist proposal, despite the fact that we have differences with him in other areas, I did a video urging Likud voters, people who are members of the Likud party, because you have to pay and join to be a member of the Likud party, that's how it works. People who are paid members of the Likud party can vote in the Likud primary, which is going to be held on December 31st. And so I did a video addressing Likud primary voters. It's a video in Hebrew, urging them to vote for Moshe Feiglin and saying that the stronger he gets, the better it is for Israel, because he is against giving up any Jewish land. He is in favor of working to encourage the Arabs to leave and offering them compensation to leave, and he has defended our rights on the Temple Mount. So if he gets stronger in the Likud, that can only be better than the horrible so-called leadership that we have today in Israel. So I did a video urging people to vote for him, and I wanted to explain, and I hope I've explained to our great JTFers why we took this stand. I wanted you to know about it because the video's in Hebrew, and I know most of our members in English, on the English forum, do not speak Hebrew, don't understand Hebrew. So I wanted you to know what the position we're taking. I don't want you to be unaware of what positions we're taking in Israel and in the Israeli elections. And of course, it's just one out of a number of things that we're doing in terms of our videos and in terms of our involvement in the upcoming March 17th Knesset elections. The Knesset elections will be held in less than 3 months, on March 17th. That's the Hebrew movement. The English movement, you've already seen the Rand Paul videos. We just put up another Rand Paul video, by the way, tonight. If you want to see it, we have another video where Rand Paul supports and embraces openly Barack Hussein Obama's attempt to help communist Cuba. Communist Cuba's economy is collapsing, and which means there's always a chance that the Cuban people can overthrow that government finally, and it can lead to freedom and hope for the Cuban people, and would make this a safer world as well, because the Cuban regime is a dangerous regime. But instead of encouraging the downfall of the communist dictatorship in Cuba, the America-hating traitor Barack Hussein Obama and his fellow traitor John Kerry, are doing everything they can to prop up and help the communist dictatorship in Cuba. And of course, the first so-called Republican to endorse Obama's policies and say what a great idea it is Rand Paul. He's the first one. Rand Paul, again, running to the left of Obama on foreign policy. He is such a disaster. And the news media has been promoting him, so he's been getting away he's been getting away with murder. And nobody has been calling him to account. I hope that finally, after he took this outrageous position supporting Obama and Kerry on Cuba, just like he supported Obama and Kerry on Iran, just like he was the only one out of 100 senators that opposed even a resolution against Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, a simple resolution speaking about how the Senate was opposed to Iran's nuclear bomb-making program and calling for Iran to abide by the sanctions. He was the only one out of 100 senators that opposed that resolution. He has, throughout his career, been in step. He has the same positions on these issues in reality as his father. He tries to create a situation where we believe that he's not exactly like his father, and he's actually more clever and more dangerous than his father, Ron Paul. But his positions are the same positions. He supports Muslim terrorist Iran. Remember, his father blamed 9/11 on Israel. You remember that? He said because of Israeli policies, that's why the United States was attacked on 9/11. Remember what that Nazi Ron Paul said? And you remember when he did an interview, and we showed it, we did a video showing this when he was running for president, he did an interview on Iranian terrorist television? On official Iranian terrorist television, defending Arab terrorism, saying all they're doing is throwing homemade bombs at the Jews. You know, they're just throwing homemade bombs. And saying that Gaza is a concentration camp, accusing the Jews of being Nazis, while the real Nazis, the Arab Nazis, who openly admit that their goal is Nazi genocide, he defended. And he defended even their use of bombs, which he said are just homemade bombs. It's an obscenity that he is being taken very seriously as a candidate for president, and very seriously by the Republicans as a potential nominee for president. I mean, he has a chance, and it is just obscene that he should have any chance, that he should be taken seriously by anybody, this vicious Nazi piece of filth. So we did a video about him as well, as you know, if you were on the forum today. And we're going to be going after Jeb Bush as well. That's another one who's going to be running. The nerve. After what George W. Bush did, I mean, the economy of the United States collapsed when he was president. The whole country was in a state of collapse. His Iraq war was such a disaster. Everything he did was so catastrophic. His policies were such a nightmare. And now they want to put another one in the White House, another Bush in the White House, the third Bush. We're going to have the third Bush in the White House now. And this is unbelievable. That means that if Jeb Bush, God forbid, was elected president, I don't think he would beat Hillary Clinton. I think he would be defeated. So I don't think he would ever get there. But he could win the Republican nomination. And if Jeb Bush by some miracle ever did become president, if he was ever elected president, that would mean that we'd have that the past three Republican presidents were all from the Bush family. All three of the past Republican presidents were all from the Bush family. Republicans can't nominate anybody outside of the Bush family, outside of that hideous family that has done so much harm to America, to the Republican Party, to the conservative cause. And of course, when I say to the conservative cause, they're anything but conservative. But because they're labeled as conservatives, even though they're anything but conservative, because they're labeled as such by the left-wing media, they give such a bad name to conservatism. This is one of the reasons why, it's the main reason why Barack Hussein Obama was able to get elected. And so we're going to be going after Jeb Bush as well. Remember, he's the one who said that illegal aliens who sneak into the United States are committing an act of love. We're going to be doing a lot of videos about him and about all the things that he stands for. We're going to be reminding people of what his brother did when his brother was president. We're going to be going after him. So you're going to see a lot of our activity in the presidential campaign directed against certain specific candidates. And the candidate we support, naturally, is Ted Cruz. So we'll try our best to do what we can to help him. You know, with the election coming up in Israel, once again, it reminds us of the fact that we, of course, should be in this election. We should be taking over Israel. We should be running the state of Israel. Imagine what a wonderful world this would be if we were running the state of Israel. And we would be in this election. I'd be in Israel by now, and we'd be in this election if we only had a multi-million dollar budget. I'm not talking about hundreds of millions of dollars or even tens of millions of dollars, which is common for today's political campaigns. I'm talking about just a multi-million dollar budget. If we had a multi-million dollar budget, the world would be such a different place. The world would look like a completely different world, and it would be a completely different world. And yes, with a multi-million dollar budget, we would become a mass movement, and we would get into the Knesset. With God's help, of course, but I'm convinced it would happen. And I think we saw on Facebook this spring, when in 3 months we got over 27,000 Israeli members in a small country the size of Israel. Over 27,000 Israelis joined us in only 3 months with our very limited budget. You can imagine what would happen if we had a real budget. So, I urge you to help us, because our message is one that has to get across. It's very important. Right now, our Hebrew movement is going to be concentrating on trying to influence the Israeli election on March 17th. And our English language movement, as you know, is going to be working on the presidential election. How can you help us? How can you make a difference? Join and comment on our main page. Join our main page. Comment on the main page. Participate. When you see polls on the main page, vote in the polls. Spread the word about the main page. Help us with the videos. Like the videos. Comment on the videos. Help us with the videos as well. And also, you can mirror the videos and put them up on your pages on YouTube. Spread the word about us. Spread the word on Facebook. Spread the word on YouTube. Spread the word everywhere you can. And in addition to helping with our main page and spreading the word about us and helping us with our videos, of course, our main problem has always been the fact that we have an inadequate budget, the fact that we don't have the money that we need to become a mass movement and to reach all the people of Israel, which we could easily do with a multi-million dollar budget. And so you know that the more support we get, the more people we reach with our message, the more people we're able to wake up and tell the truth to. Every check, every money order, every cash donation sent through the regular mail to our post office box makes a big difference. It really does. We need your help. And there are other people who would prefer to help by donating online, because for them it's more convenient to donate online. Other people find it more convenient to actually just send something through the regular mail. Either way makes no difference to us. Makes no difference at all. Whatever is easier and more convenient is fine with us. If you want to donate online, all you have to do is go to the donate button on the Hebrew main page on hayamin.org. The Hebrew main page is hayamin.org. And there's a donate button in English on the top. Help us by joining us, by spreading the word, and of course, we need your help financially. Very, very important. Again, if we work together as a team, we can accomplish things. We can influence things. And you're just seeing the very beginning now of our coming out with video after video now that will attempt to influence the electoral process in the United States and in Israel. All right, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start off with our great friend Aluf Abir, who writes, and I quote, "Do the members of your shul know about your history with the JDL and JTF, and what is their reaction?" Unquote. Most of them do. Occasionally there are new people that come in, and some people that I've just never spoken to, because it's, you know, a lot of people there. But most of them do, and some agree and some disagree, like what you would expect. And we go now to another great member, Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, I know that we don't celebrate it, but do you think there is a war on Christmas? Thanks," unquote. I think there's a war on all religious holidays or anything involving religion, as long as it's not Islam. Islam is something that the news media and that the establishment promotes. They love Islam. But if it's anything involving Christians and Jews, I think that there is a campaign against anything involving Christian or Jewish symbols or holidays. I think it does exist. And so, yes, I think there is a campaign against anything that involves any type of religious belief, with the exception of Islam. Islam is something that they promote and that they love. The news media loves Islam. Hollywood loves Islam. That they promote and they support. But any other religion, they're very much against it. And we go now to the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Who is the most immoral person on the list? James Rolfe, a.k.a. the angry video game nerd, Kevin Hart, Ozzy Osbourne, or Ron Jeremy?" James Rolfe is an actor and a comedian, but I don't know very much about him. I know he's an actor, I know he's a comedian, but I don't know that much about him. Kevin Hart is a black actor and a black comedian. Again, I don't know very much about him. I know he's a black guy. Ozzy Osbourne, of course, is a sick, immoral drug addict, a disgusting junkie. Ron Jeremy is a Jewish porn star. And so I would have to say, you're asking which is the worst out of all these terrible people. I would say Ron Jeremy is the worst, because he's Jewish and he's a porn star, and he's been an actor in numerous pornography films, and that makes him definitely the worst, because there's nothing more disgraceful than a Jew that engages in that type of behavior. We go now to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Russian Nazis beat German Nazis with massive Allied help, not alone," unquote. Well, that's certainly true. There's no question about it that the Soviet Union in World War II defeated the Nazis with tremendous assistance from the United States and from the Western world in general, but especially from the United States. And you know, they came close to losing. I mean, it was a very, very difficult, very brutal and difficult war. And they fought ferociously. There's no question. The Russian people fought ferociously. 20 million Russians were killed in the war. There were tremendous sacrifices made. But they did have massive support from the United States. Lewinsky Stinks writes, "Why is Bernie Sanders so popular? Might he be Gog?" Unquote. No. Bernie Sanders is not going to be elected president. Bernie Sanders is the self-hating Jewish senator from Vermont who openly calls himself a socialist. He's not going to get elected president. No. I wish somebody like him would get the Democrat nomination, because he's an open socialist, and I think he would lose. Although this country is becoming so crazy, sometimes you have to wonder if there's any limit on what the American people will accept. But no, I don't think he's going to be. I don't think he has any chance of getting elected to the presidency. So I don't think he's Gog. He's popular with the left-wing news media, and he's popular with the left because he's an extreme leftist, and that's what they like. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "Only thug leftist Black Lives Matter," unquote. Oh, that's certainly true, and we've seen another example of that with the murder of these two policemen. And, you know, black lives, though, don't matter when blacks
slaughter other blacks. Because 93% of the blacks who are killed in this country every year are killed by their fellow blacks. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "What is so wrong with libertarianism?" Unquote. Well, you see from Rand Paul and Ron Paul that these are anti-Semites who are completely immoral, who don't believe that society has the right to in any way defend morals or justice or truth, and so they're in favor of legalizing all narcotics and think there's nothing wrong with people destroying their lives by putting poison in their veins and up their nostrils. They think people have a constitutional right to do that if they want. They think there's nothing wrong with all the other vices and evils of society. And the things they advocate go against God's laws and what God wants in this world. God wants a world of morals and of justice, of love and kindness and mercy and truth. And if it's just a dog-eat-dog world where we don't care about anybody, where everybody just does whatever they want, and where people live immoral lives and commit the most immoral acts, that's actually a terrible nightmare. And that type of thinking, that type of immoral thinking, which is really it's a continuation of paganism, of ancient paganism. Libertarianism really is a continuation of the old paganism. If that's the way we're going to have society operate, that eventually also leads, when there's a crisis, that will always lead. If there's no moral compass, that inevitably leads to the rise of people like Hitler and Stalin and other monsters in history. So libertarianism is very wrong. It's a terrible philosophy, and we see the consequences of it. We go now to our new friend, Uncle Bourbon, who writes, and I quote, "Are you familiar with the terms white privilege and male privilege? What are your thoughts on them?" Of course I'm familiar with it. It's absurd, because whites and males are discriminated against in society. There's something called affirmative action, which we've had for over 50 years, where there is institutionalized official anti-white discrimination. This is a matter of law and a matter of policy, and the courts have ordered that we implement these policies, where people are discriminated against solely because of their race if they happen to be white. And the number one victims of this policy are Jews, because the Jews are only 1 or 1.5% of the population. And yet in colleges and in universities, let's say like Yale and Harvard and Princeton, the Jews, because they are a brilliant people, were 75, 80% of the law school students, of the medical school students. You know, the top medical schools, the top law schools, the top scientific research institutes, the vast majority of students in the 50s and 60s were Jewish in those institutions. The majority of students, even though the Jews were only 1 or 2% of the population. And yet they were the majority. They're so out of proportion to their percentage in the population when it comes to Ivy League schools, and when it comes to things that involve talent and ingenuity. And the reason, by the way, the reason why the Jews were able to do this is because after the Holocaust, there were tremendous guilt feelings about the anti-Semitic discrimination that existed in Yale and Harvard and Princeton and these other schools, you know, that restricted the Jews from entering. As a result of the Holocaust, there were a lot of guilt feelings about that. So they opened the schools up and it said, okay, Jews can come in if they want, and everybody free to compete, and it's open. An open merit system. When that happened, the Jews became 70-75% of the students, even though they were only 1% of the population. It was just incredible. But the Jews in particular, and whites in general, have since been basically thrown out of these schools, and denied entry, even when they score far higher than blacks and Arabs and Muslims and other favored groups. That's just, I mean, that's just the fact of life. These other groups are let in with much lower scores solely because of their race or solely because of their religion if they happen to be Muslim. Or now we have a new type of affirmative action. The new affirmative action is for sexual orientation. If someone is a homosexual, that will actually get them further in society now than even being black. That's the ticket to success now. It's unbelievable how crazy this country has become. But if you put on your application for college, for a college scholarship, or if you apply for jobs, or if you're a lawyer and you want to get into a law firm, or whatever, in a million different areas in society, when you apply, if you put on the application, when it's, because they now have on the application, they ask you if you're gay or straight. If you put homosexual on the application, they now have affirmative action for homosexuals and will promote homosexuals to the highest possible positions solely because of their sexual orientation, even if they're completely unqualified. So, you know, this talk about white privilege is complete baloney. We have black privilege and Arab privilege and Muslim privilege and gay privilege. That is real. That is official policy, and that's the law of the land. Thank you, Uncle Bourbon. And we go now to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, Shalom, God bless you and your work. What would you do about bee-killing pesticides as leader of Israel? And then there's a link here. LKZ, I don't know enough about this subject. So I do think that there's a place sometimes for pesticides in certain situations. I mean, we can't allow insects to overtake whole areas of, you know, especially in warm climate areas, you know, insects can become an incredible problem and even a tremendous health hazard. They spread disease and they can kill people. So there's a need for pesticides in certain situations, but on the other hand, if pesticides are not used properly, then of course they can be deadly. So I don't know enough about this particular, to make a decision here. I would have to be presented with the facts and with both sides. God willing that I should only be in a position where I'd be making decisions like this. Thank you, LKZ. And we go now to our great friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, have you ever traveled on a trolley? Do you have an affirmative action story from a trolley? Yes, there was a trolley bus. I don't know if you count that as a trolley. We count buses. I mean, what are you counting as trolleys? But there was a trolley bus, which means, in other words, an electric bus, on Lincoln Road in Miami Beach many years ago. My grandmother, Aleha HaShalom, a blessed memory, she lived in South Miami Beach. Miami Beach, South Beach, and Miami Beach were all elderly Jews at one time. Mostly poor Jews. They were mostly poor elderly people living on Social Security checks. And my grandmother lived there after she retired from work. She lived there many years ago, and they actually had a trolley bus, an electric bus, on Lincoln Road. I don't have any affirmative action stories from it that I can recall, but I remember traveling on it, and I remember enjoying the ride. Binyamin now writes, have you ever traveled on a light rail? Any affirmative action story from light rails? Yes, I traveled in Los Angeles on, you know, most of the mass transit in Los Angeles is actually light rail, or at least it was when I was there. It's been many years, but when I was there, most of their mass transit system is actually light rail. And I did travel on their mass transit system when I was there. And again, I'm sorry, but I don't recall any affirmative action stories though from it. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And we go now to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, talk about the movement Lehava and its founder. Does JTF have contact with them? Unquote. Yes, we are in contact with Bensi Gopstein, who is the founder of Lehava. I've had telephone I've had contact with him by telephone, through telephone conversation. And I think Lehava does some very good things. They're fighting against assimilation and intermarriage, and I think they do some good things. Dr. Dan writes, how is Noam Federman doing and Jimmy Sullivan doing? Unquote. I haven't been in touch with either one of them in quite a while. I haven't spoken to either one of them in years. Noam Federman, people might recall, our old timers, the veterans in our movement would recall, was doing a Hebrew program for us every week. Noam did a Hebrew program for JTF every week, in which he was urging people to take action against the expulsion in Gush Katif, for example. It was an excellent program he was doing. In the end, he stopped because he was indicted and charged with just harassment, all types of nonsense. Just like they arrested the head of Lehava in Israel. I mean, this is what Israel does. Things that would never happen in America, they would never do that. They don't grab you for saying the wrong thing during a broadcast. In Israel, they grab you for this. If you criticize the Israeli government, you can go to jail. They can accuse you of incitement or of insulting public officials. There's a law. You're not allowed to insult public officials. You know, I think there should be a law requiring you to insult them when you consider who the public officials are, the scum that we have as so-called public officials. But anyway, Noam Federman actually had legal problems because of the broadcasts he did and because of expressing himself. But he did a good Hebrew program for us. I haven't been in touch with him or with Jimmy Sullivan in years. But I read about Noam from time to time, and I know that he's still involved, he's still active, and he's still trying to do good things. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to our great friend Guns N' Roses fan, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. Your thoughts about 1, Pat Robertson, 2, John Hagee, 3, Aryeh Eldad. Thank you and God bless you, unquote. Okay. Pat Robertson, I think, was and is a Christian leader who genuinely is pro-Israel. I think he genuinely loves the Jewish people and is pro-Israel. And I think he's a good person. I like Pat Robertson. Because he always defends Israel and takes the stand that I think a leader should take, that I think any moral person should take when it comes to Israel. John Hagee, same story. John Hagee sincerely and truly supports Israel. He's a Christian minister, and he's actually the leader of Christians United for Israel. I wish Christians United for Israel and John Hagee would give their money to JTF instead of to Netanyahu and to the Israeli government. Unfortunately, they help the UJA and they help evil Jewish organizations. That's something I'm not happy about. And I think the reason is because he wants to be able to say, well, I'm friends with the Prime Minister of Israel. You know, if he said, I'm friends with Chaim ben Pesach, that wouldn't impress anybody. But when he says, I'm friends with the Prime Minister of Israel, that impresses people. So, you know, they raise millions of dollars for the UJA, for a terrible organization. The UJA is a self-hating Jewish leftist organization, the worst of the worst. But he tells his people if we contribute to them that we're helping Israel, which they're not. It's hurting Israel. So in that respect, I'm disappointed. but I do believe that despite that, I do believe that he does care about Israel. And again, I'm sorry, the groups that they give money to, though, are bad. The Jewish groups they give money to, though, are bad groups. They should be supporting us. If they really loved Israel, the best thing you can do for Israel is support JTF. JTF is the most worthy organization of support that any Jew could ever want to support, or any righteous Gentile should want to support, especially in regard to Israel, especially in regard to the struggle of Israel. Guns N' Roses fan now writes and also asks about Aryeh Eldad. Aryeh Eldad is a bad person. He is a Jewish politician who was in the Knesset, and he said Jewish political prisoners should never be released. And these Jewish political prisoners who are in prison now, he said they should die in prison, God forbid. I'm saying God forbid. But he said they should die in prison. He said, I don't understand this. After 30 years in prison, some of them get released. He said, even after 30 years, they shouldn't be released. They should have to die in prison. Israel has released thousands of Arab Muslim Nazi terrorist murderers. And they put Jews in prison for defending the Jewish people. And, you know, even if there are Jews who broke the law and did certain things that they did because they felt that the Jewish people are in danger, and they felt that they would take certain type of action to help the Jewish people, they should not be in prison for one second when the Israeli government releases thousands of Arab Muslim Nazis from prison. If the Israeli government releases thousands of Arab Muslim Nazis from prison, then certainly Jews who are in prison for trying to help the Jewish people should certainly not have to spend one second in prison. But Aryeh Eldad feels they should all die in prison. That's what he said. He did an interview on Knesset television saying he wants them all dead in prison. He said even 30 years isn't enough time for them. They should all be forced to die in prison. I hope what he wishes on these Jews happens to him. That's what I think of Aryeh Eldad, or anybody else who says that about Jewish prisoners. And I'm talking about Jewish political prisoners here. I'm talking about Jews who go to prison. I'm not talking about Jews who are in prison, God forbid, for rape or some terrible crime. I'm talking about Jews who go to prison because they try to defend the Jewish people and try to help the Jewish people. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. And again, I certainly don't advocate anything illegal. You know, if they did something, whether they did something legal or illegal is not the point here. The point is Arab terrorists are freed and Jews have to sit in prison and rot in prison. That's an anti-Semitic system. That's an outrage. We go now to PMN, who is, I think, relatively new to the forum. I'm not sure. But anyway, PMN writes, and I quote, "You once mentioned that your dad, may God bless his soul, died due to negligence of an affirmative action hospital worker. Please elaborate. Did you sue?" Unquote. I can't elaborate, PMN. For legal reasons, I'm just not able to discuss what happened. I can't discuss what happened. If someone knows something about the law, they would know what I'm talking about and why. But I'm unable to discuss what happened in my father's case. He was the victim of gross negligence by affirmative action hospital officials and doctors. But I'm not free to discuss what happened. Thank you. Beyond what I just said, what I said now, I'm permitted to say. But beyond that, if I had to go into specifics, if I had to give you specifics, then, you know, I, for legal reasons, I'm unable to do that. Thank you, PMN. And we go now to our great friend Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, comment, "Zakat Naik." Zakat Naik? You mean Zakir Naik, I think. There's a Zakir Naik. Zakir Naik he does videos. He's a Muslim preacher. He does videos. I know he does videos on YouTube. I see all of his videos on YouTube. Zakir Naik, I think you mean. Zakat. Zakat means charity in Arabic. Unless there's somebody that I don't know who has the name charity. Because zakat in Arabic is charity. So maybe there's somebody that I'm not familiar with, Smash Islam. But I think you would mean Zakir Naik. I've never seen, if you do refer to Zakir Naik, I've never seen any of his videos, but he's a Muslim preacher, so obviously I wouldn't like him. He's preaching Islam. Obviously I can't stand him. Smash Islam now writes, Brian Adams asks about Brian Adams. Well, Brian Adams is a Jew-hating anti-Israel singer from Canada. He's just a vicious Jew-hater. And Smash Islam wants comments on the Sydney hostage shooting. Okay, this is the incident that happened in Sydney, Australia, which I think we all are familiar with. We all saw it was a huge news story where this Muslim Nazi terrorist just took all of these people hostage and terrorized all of these people. And blood was shed, people were murdered. It was terrible, it was horrible, and it really shows how just having ordinary Muslims with no telltale signs, no hint that this is going to happen from them, just having a large Muslim population living in your country, that this is something that eventually happens. It's just a nightmare. Smash Islam now writes, Taliban murder children in Pakistan. That's something that we should be speaking about a lot more, yes. The Taliban Muslim Nazi terrorists murdered, I think, 130 children, something like that, 130 children in Pakistan, just raided the school and started slaughtering all these children. And these are all Muslim children. I mean, it's just, they're so barbaric. They're so cruel. They're so evil. They're so irrational. They're so Islamic. I mean, that's what Islam, this is what Islam produces. The religion is irrational. The religion is insane. Muhammad was insane. And it produces such vicious, bloodthirsty, monstrous crimes. And most of the crimes that the Muslims are committing nowadays are against other Muslims. But if this is what they do to each other, yeah, we know for sure what they'd like to do to us. You can imagine what they would want to do to us if this is what they do to their own children, their own kids, Muslim kids. They just slaughtered them. 130 Muslim kids, they just went in and started slaughtering them in a school. 130 kids butchered. You can imagine. I mean, you can imagine how heartless these people are. Smash Islam now asks for comment on Bedouins, their culture and traditions, loyal to Israel. They're certainly not loyal to Israel. They're loyal to nothing. Bedouin will stab you in the back in 2 seconds. They're not loyal to their fellow Bedouins, even. They're a very treacherous, backstabbing group of people, and they're taking over the Negev and southern Israel. They're very bad. It's true that for economic reasons, some of them agreed to become gashashim. How do you say that in English? I don't even know how to translate it in English. But they help, you know, in finding things in the desert, and they help the Israeli army in search operations and so on and so forth in the desert. I forgot how you say that in English. But anyway, I forgot what it's called. But some of them do join the Israeli army, but it's for economic reasons. They vote for all the parties. The Bedouins vote overwhelmingly, almost unanimously, for the parties that want to destroy Israel. So they are enemies of the state of Israel. Thank you, Smash Islam. And We move on now to the great Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, why do 1.5 million former Israelis and their children live outside of Israel? Thank you, unquote. A lot of it is for economic reasons. Some of them felt that they could live better economically outside of Israel, even though most of the Israelis that I know that live outside of Israel are not doing well economically. But anyway, you know, a lot of the people that leave Israel, I'm not saying all. I know some good Jews who left Israel who are good Jews. And if they're good Jews and they left, I'm very sorry that they left. It's terrible that they left. It's a tragedy if they're good Jews. But many of the Israelis who left Israel are just bad people. you know, are just people who are sick of Israel and they want to, and they're attracted to Hollywood and they're attracted to Western culture and other cultures, and you know, they don't want to be Jews, and they're just or they're money grubbing people. I mean, a lot of the people who leave Israel are just bad people. And in many cases, Israel is better off without them. There are a lot of Jews that are bad people in the world, and Israel doesn't need bad people. Israel doesn't need the bad Jews. But I also know some good Jews who've left Israel, and the good ones certainly, we wish that they would go back, and we want to encourage them to go home to the land of Israel. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem, and they left Israel either for economic reasons or all types of crazy dreams that people have that lead them to do things that really are not for their own good and certainly not good for the Jewish people. And we move now to our old good friend, the Christians for Jews, who writes, and I quote, Klitschko, Djokovic, McElroy, Messi, Ronaldo are the big sports stars to Europe. I'll assume you're referring to USA in regards to black sports worship, unquote. I suppose. Although I see black people on all types of basketball teams all over the world. But I guess in the United States, blacks have a much more dominant role in sports. But I think that the whole concept, again, I believe the whole concept of worshiping sports figures is just crazy and irrational. I think it's crazy and irrational. I'm sorry. This whole culture we built around this, I think, is crazy. I don't believe it should be an important part of someone's life watching frantically to see if your team is going to kick a ball and achieve a goal, you know, in a soccer game, or is going to be able to throw a ball through a hoop in a basketball game. I don't think that should be a major part of someone's life, worrying about that. And for many people, it's the number one thing in their life. It's the thing that they can't wait to get to as soon as they get out of work or whatever they're doing. They're addicted to it. They love this. And I think it's insane. I think it's a complete waste of someone's life. What good is this going to do you or the world or anyone? Thank you, Christians for Jews. And we go now to our great new friend, righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, how long before Afghanistan, Pakistan becomes an Islamic state, and how would this affect Iran, unquote. I actually think they are Islamic states now. Pakistan, if you recall, actually did help Iran, and they gave the Iranians centrifuges for their nuclear program. Now they're not doing that, but because of the Shiite-Sunni rivalry. But at first, as a fellow Muslim state, they helped them. Afghanistan is very pro-Iranian. So I think it's already a very serious problem. Pakistan should not exist. Pakistan certainly shouldn't be allowed to have nuclear weapons, and they should not exist. Pakistan should be a part of India. It belongs to India. And we go now to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, during an anti-terrorism drill, how were two NYPD officers killed execution style by one lone untrained gunman? I think that the NYPD officers were not prepared for this. They didn't expect this. This was a surprise attack. And we haven't had executions like this. We haven't had assassinations like this in New York City in a while. We used to have this in the 70s. This was actually pretty commonplace. But we haven't had this in a while. And so I don't think they were ready and didn't anticipate it. And so this lunatic was able to go and catch them by surprise and murder them in cold blood. Thank you, Maimonides, and I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, shalom.